So they take Jack
yeah.
to Foster's funeral home for imaginary friends.
And he's voiced by Jack Black. That's the remake. There's an end credit scene where it's this whole like...
And Blue is like, what's up with this guy? Oh my God. It cuts to the front of a horse that's parked directly behind him, and the horse goes,
and then Davey pops out from him.
Yeah, after he goes and gets back in the car.
Right.
And then he runs straight for the Alamo across the lawn.
Right. So they're in the Alamo. Davey's tracking this guy down. And who should he meet but bad old couple?
Yeah.
And Pee Wee Herman.
No.
I do have some Alamo facts.
Alamo us this fact.
I would like to Alam know what you're going to share with us.
Have either of you been to the Alamo?
No.
I don't remember it looking like this, but that's okay, because the Alamo exterior was filmed on location, but they were not allowed to film inside, so they recreated the interior. And Cloak and Dagger is one rare film that featured actual footage of the Alamo entrance at Alamo East Plaza, especially driving up to the church doors. 10 years after this film's debut, the road was permanently closed to traffic. There's your Alamo facts.
That's amazing. Maybe not amazing. That is informative.
Yes.
Old couple. Isn't it about time you tell me what's going on? Like, I owe you anything, lady.
Right. This kid doesn't need to mention anything. And, like, him being very tight-lipped, you know, is kind of been brought up before. He only gave, like, certain things to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very much like, I'm not going to tell you. It's one of those situations where if I was in it mm-hmm. and I was not a bad guy, spoilers, then I would go ahead and be like, okay, what do you need me to do in this moment? How can I help you without also, you know, breaking the law or causing, you know, issues for other people?
Mm-hmm.
That would be my response. But he tells this old lady, I'm trying to get that guy. Or he's like, oh, I can't really tell you. Or he says,
that guy's dropping off some like a case and I need to get it.
Yeah. And she tries to go and find her husband. And that's when they're like, 5 minutes before the Alamo closes.
So Davey, the guy drops the case. Mr. Rice drops the case. Davey makes a dash for it, goes to the front door. Hey, some of that kid's stealing stuff.
He walks over to the case very slowly, picks it up, but then he tries to run out the Alamo instead of just...
So suspicious.
So suspicious.
And nothing that Jack Flack would do.
No. Jack Flack would have probably picked it up and then just walked.
Casually,
walked slowly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when he gets captured or when he gets caught by the guards, mm-hmm. you know, that's when the old lady steps in and is just like, oh, no, it's just a misunderstanding. And her husband says, yes, I was asking him to go get my case. And he just grabbed the wrong one.
Yes. And then there's a skirting around where the old man's like, I'll figure it out with this guard and the guy whose case it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what? And then the lady's like, why don't you and I go get in the car? My husband has a way of sorting these things out.
Yeah. And so they get back into the car. Everything seems to, it looks like the old man gave the cartridge away or the bag with the cartridge away, but it didn't when the old man comes into the...
What makes you think I gave them the case with the cartridge in it?
Right. And then he opens up and he sees the cartridges in the case and he's like, now you have to tell me because I just gave away my very expensive camera.
Which turns out not to be true later on. They pull the camera out of the case.
Yeah.
Okay. But I call this scene, oh no, I love them so much.
I know, because this is when we find out that they're actually, you know, baddies.
And we do that through a reveal where she's like, he's like, okay, so Davey's like, the Cloak and Dagger has a microchip in it that has like important information on it. And these bad guys are trying to get it out of the country. And she's like, oh, what did they tell you about the bad guys? And he's like, well, only that one of them has like 3 fingers. And she goes, oh, and she immediately takes off her hand, her glove,
mm-hmm.
and reveals that she, in fact, has 3 fingers. And he's like, ah! And then 2 old people proceed to beat a little kid a little bit. And then they decide to exposit, like, where they're going to go, what they're going to do, when it's going to happen, as she pulls out chloroform to, like, make him pass out so that they can have him killed because, and then they exposit, they said that they would take, the other guys are going to take care of him. And okay, I don't know if you know much about chloroform, but you know how I yell about strangulation and how it takes somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes to fully strangle somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Wonder how long it takes to make somebody pass out with chloroform?
30 minutes?
Not 30 minutes. It's, okay. it's something like 3 to 5 minutes, mm-hmm. give or take. But in everything you've ever seen, someone holds up the rag and the person is down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's some bullshit.
What if it's one of those vape pens from Puppet History?
That's hilarious. And I would allow it.
I've got some more Sean facts.
Okay.
For this scene and for this couple. In the car scene, when they're leaving the Alamo, actor John McIntyre, the older gentleman, tells Davey that he has the cloak and dagger tape in his camera bag, and why don't you open it and find out? In this line, McIntyre's voice sounded so similar to his role in Disney's The Rescuers in 1977 that most audiences recognized his voice immediately as the same actor. I don't really know how that, like, how you know that, like, how many people.
I recognize voices like that, though, all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's that guy from that thing. And you're like, you Google it real fast and you're like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the red M&M, I think, is done by the same guy who does Fry from Futurama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before I knew that Bender and Jake the dog were the same guy, I was like, they are so much the same guy.
John DiMaggio also does the voice of the Lady Eboshi's bodyguard in Princess Mononoke.
Oh.
Yeah, it's great. It's nice seeing that kind of range with voice actors are amazing.
He's pinnacle voice actor. I would pay the visiting fee at a con to go shake that man's hand.
Mm-hmm.
This elderly couple, also John McIntyre and Jeanette Nolan, were actually married in real life for almost 56 years until his death in 1991.
So were they married when they did this role?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, nice.
The elderly couple also had both had parts in the original Psycho, another Hitchcock throwback. And director Richard Franklin directed the sequel, Psycho 2. Yeah, this guy's very kid-friendly focused in 1983, Psycho 2. And Henry Thomas would later go on to play a young Norman Bates in Psycho 4, The Beginning in 1990.
Wow.
Yeah. Lots of psychos. This old couple, kind of psycho.
And the kid,
too.
The trunk opens up.
Oh, yeah. Davey's back. Davey wakes up back in the trunk with the dead body of Morris.
And Alvarez is looking in at him, and then he walks over to Tracksuit, and he's all like, he hasn't woken up yet. Do you want to wait till he wakes? No, Tracksuit says he hasn't woken up yet. Do you want to wait to wake him until he wakes up to kill him? And Alvarez says, I want to get him out to the desert, and then I'll do it. And then Tracksuit says, well, I think we should be getting more money since we have to kill this kid, too. Alvarez and Tracksuit both go talk to Rice about it. And that's when he kicks out the back seat.
Yeah.
American model, I guess. American marksman, makemanship.
Okay, so I'm trying to remember of all of the different kind of cars we've had. And there's only one car that you could actually kick out the back seat to get into the trunk, but you are essentially ripping out that back seat because it doesn't need a lot of, it doesn't necessarily need a lot of strength because it's already, the back seat itself is bracing up against the frame of the car. So it's not like it's kind of like how you have on cars where like the back seats will fold down.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like operates a little bit like that.
I guess so. But I just think a 10-year-old encumbered by a dead body would not have the strength to kick out a back seat.
Right. It could very easily be more glued. So
whatever. That's not where the science breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but they leave the keys in the car.
Well, that's just a movie trope.
OK, that's fair. He uses the phone now, right?
Yeah, this is where he sees the phone because everybody's away from the car and he's like, I gotta call Kim. And so he calls Kim and she's like, yeah, my mom left me a note, but I can't read her handwriting.
You need to use the airport. They're trying to get the plans out of the country by midnight.
Yeah, they're leaving for Mexico City. So Kim's like, how am I supposed to get to the airport? Use your bus pass. And Davey, the bad guys come back, mm-hmm. and he sees that they're, you know, talking about, like, oh yeah, what about the little girl? And he's like, oh, don't worry, I planted something in that walkie-talkie of hers.
Well, he doesn't say. He says he planted a bomb with her. He doesn't say where.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And he says that it could take out like an entire good chunk of her block that she's on.
Yeah.
So it's a big enough bomb. And so that's when Davey realizes that he has to like call Kim back. But the baddies are there. So he has to first like try and find a way to escape.
So what would you do if you had the keys to the car and all three of the bad guys are standing behind you?
I would start the car and try and back up into them.
I would 100% roll their butts over.
Yeah. But they get out of the way. I think the tracksuit guy is far away because they had mentioned like, so-and-so's got the keys. Let me just open it. There's like a moment of tension where one of them could be coming into the car, in the front of the car and catch Davey, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
And so Davey, you know, shoots the car out, backs up.
This is a little action sequence for us.
Right. It's a little chase where Davey, who's really short, is trying to drive this car.
Yeah. He's all like, help me, Jack. And he's like, I can't. This is a real car. I thought was pretty cute.
You're right.
I was going to tell you when I drove my first car.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know?
Oh, yeah.
So in honor of the fact that Jamie has been in town for the holidays, we met in kindergarten. So... seven-ish, maybe eighth grade, probably, no, sorry, not eighth grade, 8 years old, so maybe first grade or something. I'm going with her to her house. She lived with her grandma at the time, and they had like a barbed wire fence and a gate, like a metal gate that had to swing in for you to drive in. And so her grandma got out and was like, okay, I'm going to open the gate. I want you to drive the car in.
And how old?
Eight.
Okay.
Could you imagine? The 80s were
wild. This is early 90s, but yeah, or wild.
Yeah, it was maybe 1990, maybe. Yeah. And well,
it would have been 92 if you were eight, because you were born in
83.
So, oh yeah, so it would be 91.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. All I remember is they're like, this one's go, this one's stop. And I pressed the go one a little too hard. I almost took out her grandma. Wouldn't have been so bad. She's an evil woman. But then I like slammed on the brakes and I'm like, oh my God, never again.
Do you want me to take out the evil woman part?
No, she's evil.
Okay,
like,
good.
I have a very short list of people that I truly think are awful.
Yeah.
Top of the list. Nice. Well, maybe not the tip top, but like pretty f***ing up there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the top.
No, you're not. You'd have to get up out of bed pretty early.
I totally bleep
there, Jen. You have to push a button.
So what's great about this chase scene is... one of the hardest things to learn when you're first driving a car is not necessarily the brakes, or that wasn't the issue for me. For me, it was the turning and trying not to hit something.
Oh, that felt very familiar.
Yeah. And so like what Davey's doing is he's like, you know, he's getting the gears shifted and everything. But then when he's turning, he's running into all this different stuff and it feels very realistic.
Yeah.
He eventually gets out of the parking garage and gets onto the street and he's still having issues with turning and he crashes into...
Construction site.
But there's a convenient phone next to him. So what does he do? He calls his dad.
Okay. And his dad doesn't believe him. He's like, I'm not at home. He's like, why aren't you in bed? I'm not at home. Why are you not at home? We're trying to get the plans from the midnight and Mexico City and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, what are you talking about? Blah, 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 blah. And then Jack Flack pulls him out of the phone booth just in time for the blue truck to crash through it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the gray suit. Tracksuit is driving, right? He drives through it, drives into an antique shop or whatever, flies through the window, and now he's dead.
Yeah. But because the phone was still with off the receiver, that's when Davey's dad hears the crash and he starts getting worried.
He starts freaking out. My notes in fact say dad is now in play.
Yeah. So Davey ends up footing it and he goes over to another garden area in this San Antonio, Texas town.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So he is running away from these guys who pull out the big guns and are now like super out to kill him.
Jack Flack says, you know, you're going to have to deal with him because he can't get to the airport while he's running from them.
This is where my notes go. Jack Flack is a jerk.
Yeah.
And he is literally the voice in this little boy's head urging him to kill, kill, kill.
I think that's an extreme way of putting it, but I do agree with it.
Thank you.
So Davey ends up essentially making it so that he's like in the shadows. Mm-hmm. He sees both Rice and Alvarez separated, and then he tricks them into shooting at each other.
In the, suggested by Jack, the crossfire gambit.
Yeah, because it is a gambit, because at any point he could be killed.
Yeah. So what he does essentially is he gets Alvarez in front of him and Rice behind him. He hides in the shadow like a little mini it. Mm-hmm. A rat runs out. Alvarez shoots it in one. And the rat pulses and dies, which I thought was a little intense for me.
Yeah, it looks very realistic.
You see the red viscera, as my word of the day is, explode out from it before it pulses and dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then Davey runs back towards Rice and is just like, hey, can you even shoot in a straight line? And he then unleashes, I don't care if there's a silencer on it, if you unleash a semi-automatic or an automatic weapon, mm-hmm. people are going to notice, even in Texas.
I don't know. I mean, gunfire off in a dorm room didn't attract anybody in eight heads in a duffel bag.
That's fair. But was that in Texas?
No, that was in like the East Coast.
Yeah. So, I mean, depending where.
I mean, you could argue that, you know, gunfire in Texas is so ubiquitous.
I'm with you.
You could argue that gunfire is so ubiquitous in Texas that nobody would bat an eye.
Well, apparently this child can outrun gunfire and runs past Alvarez, who gets shot and is instantly dead.
Mm-hmm.
So then Davey runs and a Jack, who I cannot stress enough, knows everything that Davey knows, mm-hmm. is like, oh no, don't run that way. It's a dead end.
Yeah.
And then he's in a dead end.
Yeah.
Holding the gun he got off Alvarez.
Yeah, because that was part of it. Rice was farther away. Alvarez was closer to Davey, and that's why he was able to pick up the gun. Like, even Jack Flack was like, you got to shoot him now. And it's like, Davey has been very hesitant about actually crossing over into that line.
I think that they try to get away with what's going to happen next in mm-hmm. this context by making Rice a sadistic.
Yeah, because Rice comes up to Davey and was like, you know what? I was just going to kill you, but mm-hmm. no, not anymore. You pissed me off to such a degree that I'm going to watch you bleed out, essentially.
I'm gonna shoot you in the stomach. And when it hurts more than you've ever felt it hurt anymore, it's going to hurt even more. And I'm going to do. And
you're talking about taking out his kneecaps before he shoots him in the stomach, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's when Jack Flack says, I'm going to go ahead and go over here. I'm going to distract him. I'm going to take off my hat. And that Agent X is going to, you know, deflect the bullets. And Davey starts like eyeing over into this empty area.
Yeah. And I think he might be losing his faculties, but I think Rice is pretty smug for a guy who just friendly fired his guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when Davey looks over there, and in Davey's imagination, Jack Flack is saying,
shoot me.
And then Davey cries out, no, Jack. And that's when Rice pulls the gun over to that empty area and starts shooting.
Right. And it's so real to Davey that he shoots.
Mm-hmm.
He shoots once.
Just once. And it's enough to knock Rice back into the water.
Yeah. He's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead now.
He's dead. Yeah.
So our three goons are dead and we have the two old spies left.
Right.
So Jack, this scene is probably my least favorite scene.
Yeah.
So let's just skip it. I'm joking. We have to talk about it. It's what the whole point of this podcast is about.
So Jack Flack is unfazed because he's imaginary, he's not real. But then Davey starts kind of coming to grips with reality himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's coming to grips with reality, that's when the bullet holes start becoming a lot more real to Jack Flack.
Oh, and I'm sorry, Rice wasn't scared of the gun because he thought it was fake from before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
so you know.
Yeah. And another reason why it was like uber cocky.
Yeah.
But as Davey is kind of letting go of his imaginary friend is also dying.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I guess these, he like pokes a hole through his hat. And he's like, oh, I guess this hat doesn't deflect real bullets or whatever. And he's all like, what a great game. And Davey's like, I don't want to play anymore. I don't want to play more. And he like takes his figurine and he stomps on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a weird little expose on this guy. He's all like, your dad said the same thing. And he's like, what? And he's like, well, your dad would play cowboys and Indians. Appropriate anymore. But
right.
like, he got tired of it. And why do you guys always smash your toys when you're done? And then Davey's like, what? What are you talking about? And that's when he starts to bleed.
Mm-hmm.
It just runs through his leather jacket. It's not like a spray or anything, but it's dark and weirdly darker.
Right.
It's so dark.
Do you know what the last thing that Jack Flack says to Davey?
No.
Well, Davy says, I can't do this on my own. And Jack Flack says, as he no longer has any body, he's literally just the voice in this kid's head, says, you were always on your own. And that hit me right here, like in my heart. Like, if you have ever been, you know, a kid who probably had to like take care of yourself starting at a very young age, whether that was through neglect because your parents were working, whether that was because of parents who were just neglectful by nature and probably they shouldn't have been parents, it becomes one of those things where you start, like for me, it was like these imaginary conversations that I would have with people who were real or were not real, but I was having a conversation with them to kind of plan out my day or plan out something that was stressing me out.
Process an emotion you hadn't been through.
An emotion that you had going through. So it's like that line of you were always on your own. It's like
that thing you used to cope that thing, you don't need anymore.
Yeah, because you recognize it as a coping skill.
Uh-huh.
And you recognize there's some benefits to it, but maybe you don't have to necessarily cope on your own. Maybe you can just have those like processing of emotions with actual people in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they take Jack
to
Foster's funeral home for imaginary friends.
And he's voiced by Jack Black. That's the remake. There's an end credit scene where it's this whole like...
And Blue is like, what's up with this guy? Oh my gosh. I would love it. I love that show. There should be a place where there should be a repository for imagination.
It's one of the cruelest things about a universe where you don't believe in an afterlife is the idea that all of the experiences that you have are ultimately not getting backed up. So someone can like you really have to put yourself out there and hope that like your thoughts or your ideas or your creations are going to be told again and again and again. That's like literally the only way that you can.
It's the only immortality you can achieve.
Yeah. When you don't believe in an afterlife.
Yeah. I counterpoint that with, I think that if in fact, and I don't personally believe this, but if in fact, okay, on my dark days, I can believe this, but most of the time I don't necessarily subscribe to this, but I put a lot of thought into it. If, in fact, we snuff out like a candle and even the smoke that rises from our wick eventually dissipates, right? It makes the experiences you have had, the things you've done, the things you said, and the marks you've left, delible or indelible, all the more precious because they were so finite in nature. We hold things beautiful that are very temporary, like flowers or a good meal or a conversation or that smell or that taste or that touch, you know, that experience. All of the really, really good things in life eventually evolve and change and go away. And that is us. And I don't think we lose value because of that. I think we gain value because of that. And yes, I want God to be like, and you did a good job, and here's eternity. And I get to fly around and have insane conversations with Neil Gaiman as I slowly pet Jen's hair while she makes me another cup of coffee for this millennia, right? But like, and all that sounds really lovely, but I do think that it could be just lovely being what it is, which is all the more reason to put off doing laundry.
And that was really your roundabout way of saying you don't want to do laundry.
Jen does the laundry.
Guess who's trying to get to the airport?
Everyone. Hold on, where I am in my notes. Oh, did you know? Okay, just under, this kid is f-ing mental in my notes. I wrote, the dad is Jack. Because the first time I watched it took this long. Shut up. They had different outfits on.
It was a completely different person.
I also descend from a long line of people who have facial recognition issues. I do.
That's okay.
Like all middle-aged men with mustaches remind me of my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. We watched
Tacoma FD.
Tacoma FD, right? And I was like, now my dad was a Tukwila fireman, but I was like, red suspenders, blue shirt, mustache, father? Yeah, it's a whole thing. They all are the same person.
My dad never, I don't remember my dad ever having a mustache. He tried to grow out a beard at one point and it didn't stick.
I bet it didn't.
Yeah.
I don't remember a great deal, but I don't remember your dad having a beard face.
No, no.
Hey, guess where we are?
Random Louis Anderson cameo.
Where?
There was.
Is he the cabbie?
He's the cabbie.
Who shoots are you kidding
he's
me?
He's the cabbie. He's not the cabbie who gets
no,
Davey
he's not
to
good
the
guy cabbie.
No, he's the cabbie who's like, piss off, kid. Do we bleep that word piss? Piss off?
No.
Okay.
Louis Anderson, God rest.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe he's dead. Love I can that. Kind of believe he's dead,
yeah.
But I'm sad that he's dead.
Yeah, and the dad and the mom go to, the dad and the mom end up like convening at the mom's place.
She's not with you. He's not with them.
Right. And then that's when she sees the note saying that they got to get to the airport and everything. And so
the dad already knew that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's not listening to his son. But now he has like confirmation that he should probably go there.
Okay. So the dad is still on his way. With mom now, when the kid looks at his watch, it's 11:37, and he's all, I don't know where most of these hours have gone, by the way, but Texas is big. I assume there's a lot of drive time. He's all like, I don't think I'm going to get there in time. Can you drive faster? And the good guy cabbie, who's like, oh, you're going the way I'm going home anyway, is like, mm-hmm. You got it, boss. And like, boom. And I was like, that is very Texas, I think. I don't know much, but that seems very on point, on brand.
As a kid, it would be pretty great to scream at a taxi driver, can you go any faster? And they'd just be like, yep.
I remember being on the Tacoma Bridge,
mm-hmm.
and I just realized how miles per hour worked. And I was like, Dad, can you go 60 miles per hour? Because then we'll be going a mile a minute. And he was like, yeah. And then he did it. And I was like, Hayata! And now I'm like, Naomi, keep it under 70. Naomi, keep it under 70. Naomi, keep it under 70. Good times. Good memories.
And we did mention that Rice was pressed a button on something to activate the bomb, right?
Yeah, they had an hour countdown. That's why it's super duper important.
Right. And Davey also realizes that the bomb is in Kim's walkie-talkie.
Yeah, he figured it out after Jack said something.
Right. And he couldn't get through to her on the walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
So she's carrying the bomb. Davey has to get to the airport to get rid of the bomb.
And stop the
baddies.
Yeah.
And so when he gets there, he sees Kim, is having this dialogue with the security as we're seeing the older couple proceed through the airport.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Customs is a joke. Okay, so he goes to the desk and he's like, how do you find somebody? She goes, I can make an announcement. He says, Kim Gardner. And she's like, Kim Gardner, please come to the customs. Kim in the office is like, oh, I think I heard my name out there. I think that's Kim Gardner. That's me.
I didn't hear anything.
I just have a few more questions. La, la, la.
Right.
And okay, so Davey almost catches up to the guys who've gone through security. The old man said, just check my bag. I don't want it to go through that machine because of the camera or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it is the 80s and everything's fine. Davey runs through the security line. Now he does get stopped, but I'm like, customs is a joke here.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, Mom, Dad.
Does he get to them first or does he get to Kim first?
No, he goes through customs and is dad. And they start to bicker like, oh, no, how could we, this old wizened couple, have a young son like this? Our plane is boarding. We must go. Like, I can't imagine somebody not claiming their kid. But he's like, I can prove it. My game cartridge is in his bag.
Right.
And the security guard's like, yes, I'm going to need to see inside that bag. Like, what the f-? And then Kim walks out of the interrogation room where they were smoking, three men smoking cigarettes alone with a tiny little girl at midnight. And he's like, the customs guy is saying to him just before she walks out, he's like, the plane will wait. And I'm like, no, it won't. The plane will not wait for you or anyone. Planes don't wait. But then Kim's like, Davey, Kim. They like hug.
He grabs the walkie-talkie out of her back.
Because, yeah. But then the old man grabs the kid. Or it might be the old lady grabs the kid. Doesn't matter. Every time he's like, I have a bomb. I have a bomb.
Yeah.
They, choke him a little bit so he can't say, I have a bomb.
Yeah.
Which would stop me.
Yeah, I know.
But they drag him out to a plane. Kim explains the entire situation to, again, because she's just a font of information for everyone who won't listen.
Right. I think the parents get to there, but there's also the police officer who meets them at the airport.
And he'd been taking their sweet time explaining everything. We're searching the canal now for your dead son.
But then they hear of a hostage situation in the airport.
Right.
And they realize it's there's a kid there. And he's like, oh, maybe that's Davey. And so parents go run in, seeing what's going on.
So as the old couple are dragging him through the check area, the old man shoots, I would say, a gay-coded character, even though we only see him for about a second.
I know.
Right in the balls.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, grabs his crotch and falls backwards, which is pretty good. And then, not pretty good. Devastating, but hilarious. And then they drag him out onto the tarmac and up the steps and into the plane. And then they start demanding a pilot. Mm-hmm. And that's when everything converges for the climax.
Right. And so Davey's dad is there and Kim and her mom are reunited. But Davey's dad has the ability to like drive airplanes on a tarmac.
Uh-huh.
And so he's like, just let me go out there because if they've made the threat that if they don't have someone in 5 minutes, they're going to kill Davey. When his dad is like, they're like, oh, well, the uniform might fool him. But what happens if you have to take off? And he's like, I'll figure something out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes out there, he gets onto the plane, but Davey's like on the back of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like trying to figure out how to stop the bomb and the walkie-talkie.
He pulls a wire and then he starts calling out for Jack. He's like, Jack, I didn't mean it. I need your help. I don't know how to defuse a bomb.
His dad is in the front of the plane and Davey's, he like picks up something that specifically says Com PA, or it's like it's like the thing that pilots talk to everybody in the cabin.
Yeah, he says I have to call it in to take off.
Right, he says I got to call it in, but he picks up the thing that literally says cabin PA.
Yeah.
So you would think that they would know what that
Fly
was.
Fly 147 San Antonio, flight 741 mm-hmm. San Antonio.
Right. And so
this is Captain Jack Flack.
Right, cuz when
Danny, come to the front of the plane.
Right. He like makes an excuse saying that I need to make sure that the kid's okay before we
told them.
I told them.
Yeah. No, they told me.
They
Sorry.
Told me that I had to make sure that the kid was okay or alive before I take off.
So she goes back. The old lady goes back to drag him from the front of the plane. And she's like, come on. And he's like, the bomb is about to go off. And she's like, come on, get up to the front of the plane. It's going to go off in less than a minute. And then he just sets it down and does what she says.
Yeah. And that's when she sees he walks off and she sees the bomb. And she's like, George, watch out. There's a bomb back here.
So George runs back. And as Danny runs towards the front of the plane,
that's when his dad says, Captain Jack Flack, Danny, get up here right now.
So George grabs him and drags him back towards the back of the plane. But as he does so, the dad kind of like puts the plane into forward momentum and they topple and the kid regains faster, gets to the front of the plane. He shuts the door. Did you see the lock?
Yeah.
It was a little bathroom turn lock.
Yeah, I know. But George is distracted by his wife saying that there's a bomb and he has to defuse it.
So he walks over and he pulls the other wire out the same kind of wire that Danny did that didn't seem to be connected to anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know how to defuse a bomb. So they run to the front of the plane. Hopefully they left the bomb back there.
Yeah.
Neither of them thinks to open the rear door and throw it out. But
well,
like,
they can't. They try and open up the door to the airplane, but they can't because it's pressurized.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I always figured like an emergency door, you could pull the red lever and even if it was pressurized, you could get out. But no, only if it depressurizes.
I'm not entirely sure. Airplane enthusiasts, if you would like to comment on our podcast or send us an email to shockedandapplaud@gmail.com, feel free to let us know what happens.
How you would navigate the science of that situation.
Right.
So they start shooting through the lock on the wooden door of the airplane.
Right. And Davey's getting lowered out. His dad opens up a window.
Uh-huh. Because that window you can open.
Well, I could imagine that the pilot area probably has something else. Again, I don't know how planes work, so I'm not going to try and speculate.
Where's the starboard ailer
tutor? This is where the science breaks down.
You're going down because imaginary friends can't fly.
Right, but it's not imaginary; it's his actual dad.
Starboard ailer tutor.
For that reference, go and check out our "A Wish for Wings That Work."
Yeah, that's a great episode. That was in July.
Right.
Okay. So he's like, get out of the plane, drop the ground, run away from the plane. Right? And he's like, I want you to go with me. I'll never fit through the window.
He can totally fit through the window.
100%. He's halfway out the window as he's lowering him down.
Mm-hmm.
He drops the boy. The boy almost gets hit by the tires, which would have been a hilarious ending. Like, if that's just where it stopped.
Davey, no!
Just freeze frame. And then it blows up. He gets ran over. Flambéed roadkill.
And then we exit out and it's all been a board game of Davy doing all these different things.
Right. But then there's like a broken snow globe at the foot of the bed when Kim wakes up as an old woman and she's all like,
Davy.
She would be more like, Atari. Just because you got to make it an obscure toy you had as a kid. Kind of. Maybe.
But
whatever.
Davy escapes.
He dodges.
He like runs after the plane, which is going a lot faster than him.
He said, run away. You run towards. What is your problem?
It's his dad. He wants to make sure that his dad's okay. And so.
He's not a cool guy because he looks at explosions.
Davy isn't, but his dad is definitely a cool guy because he walks away from explosions.
Oh, is that what happens next?
Yeah.
Did you notice that the outline was Fleck in a hat and then you cut away and it's dad with his regular hair?
Right. Because Jack Fleck is a representation of how Danny views his father or how he wishes he could view his father.
And now he is the hero that he needs so he can view him as. What disturbs me most, although it's beautiful, flames in the background, black fades over to like him actually in a forward facing light. He's smiling and it's creepy, but he's managed to break no bones.
Yeah.
He's relatively unharmed. So maybe that your reaction would be to smile. Mine would be like to put my hands on my head and be like, the f*** just happened.
But we don't get that moment. We get a freeze frame.
Well, they run and they hug and they swirl. And he's like, Dad, Dad, you survived. And Dad goes, Jack Fleck always survived. And he goes, I don't need Jack Fleck because I have you.
It's so adorable. You don't think it's cute?
No. Genuinely don't. Because here's what happens. They do freeze frame. And then... until I turned to Jen and said this, but I'll tell it to you now. And then there were no consequences.
Okay, so like before Davy's dad leaves for the day at the beginning of the day, because this goes through an entire day. This whole movie goes through an entire day.
Yeah.
His dad's like, you know, there's a therapist that I'd like you to go see. I'll have the day off. We can go and see the doctor together.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that feels like after they get through with all of the paperwork and talking to the police and taking down statements and everything, they still keep that therapist appointment, but they're still in like all of the clothes that they had from the day before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. As he smolders. Into the appointment, like he like licks his finger and puts out his Snidely Whiplash mustache on the side.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So can I ask either of you, was there something that your dad used to do with you when you were younger that, or just like a parent that did something with you that stuck with you for your entire life? I'll go first to give an example. My dad liked Star Wars and Star Trek. We had like the original trilogy, which on VHS before George Lucas did all of his shenanigans. But we
where they turned all the lightsabers into flashlights.
Yeah. There was also the Star Trek movies, the ones like from the original cast and everything. Like the third one was the one with the whales, or the fourth one. The third one was that with Khan. Wrath of Khan, yeah. I never liked that one because sticking something into your, like...
That is the worst part.
Worst part. But we would watch those. Like, I remember sitting down and watching those with my dad. And I think that's part of the reason why I love movies and storytelling so much is because it was something that I could do with one of my parents that was always there. I didn't... My mom was always working. And when she wasn't working, she would come home and, like, sleep because she was always so exhausted. So I didn't really have that kind of relationship with my mom, but my dad, I had that kind of a relationship with my dad.
Yeah.
So
sorry, it was Wrath of Khan was number two, Search for Spock was number three.
That's good because I was like, I know odds are bad or evens are bad, but I love Wrath of Khan and I love the whale one. And I'm like, both of them? Well, no, one of them is bad then if they're right next to each other.
Yeah.
Nope, two and four.
Thank you for clarifying that, Jen, because Sean would have been really angry.
Sean would have written a letter and he already writes a fact sheet. I'm going to agree with you, Lydia. I think, and not just agree with you, identify with that because when we would watch something together, like we would binge watch, Dad and I and Abe would binge watch Red Dwarf together, and there's no conflict. You're maybe having a snack and you're watching a show and like maybe you need a joke explained to you, but that's hardly like some big social or moral or like gigantic thing that needed, you know, if you are enjoying a work of fiction, you don't have to engage any of your conflict like sections of your brain. It's just understanding and enjoying and humor and scared stuff or your fear, whatever. But like, you're not, I think part of it is like, there's no conflict there. I can enjoy this with you and we can be here together and we can, you know, dissect it if we want to, or just have enjoyed it. I think one of the reasons why I don't find conversation very hard in a lot of ways is like, because after we watched a movie, we would walk around or whatever. And it would be like, well, what was your favorite part? Mm-hmm. And we would get to like, you know, like, well, this part was really cool. I don't understand why this part happened. Well, let me explain to you why I think it happened. And like, it was a very natural way to begin conversations. And sometimes it went into social issues. Sometimes it went into lightly political issues. Sometimes it was, you know, why is that funny and this is not funny? Why was that scary and this is not scary? Like it opened up a way to communicate with your parent that wasn't, I don't know, formal or like forced.
Right. We would never talk about it afterwards.
Oh, no?
No, we would just sit down and we would just watch it. And just like sometimes being with someone that you care about, doing something together, even if you're not necessarily talking, like sometimes that's how you know you're in a good relationship. You're okay with the silence. Really like being around the person.
Jen, do you like being alone in the same room with me sometimes?
Sometimes.
Wah, wah, wah.
When you're not embarrassing me.
Then why do you keep editing this podcast?
I'm editing the podcast.
Why do you keep producing the podcast? And why do you keep editing it if you know that it's making your friend upset?
So my mom used to take us out for individual children days. Like I remember going out to a movie every once in a while with her. I think my fondest memories of my mom growing up was when she was teaching me, which is a little dry. She homeschooled me through fourth grade. So there are a lot of things where I had these sort of aha moments about what I was learning, and it was with my mom. So it's very Naomi's face.
Naomi is so happy right now.
I know. Well, I know how much your mom loves to teach and I know how much you love to learn. And so that it does not surprise me at all.
Man. So shocked and applaud moments.
Do we have any more
Sean facts?
Sean facts. No. That's it.
You nerd. Okay, I feel pretty good about my shocked, so maybe for once I don't like do it a throwaway.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, okay. Does that mean I go first?
I mean, I could go first if you would like to end on yours, since yours is such a throwaway.
It's not a throwaway for once. My applaud is my throwaway, like often.
Okay, well, how about you start with your shocked and we'll end with your applaud?
But my applaud is bad, but my shocked is good.
Your applaud is bad?
Well, it's not bad. I mean, it's what it is.
Okay. Well, should we start with the applauds?
Yeah, let's start with applauds.
Okay, Naomi, what is your applaud moment?
The rewatchability of this movie. I was like, I watched it the first time. And here's the thing. Sometimes I like watch it in the morning and I get grumpy about it, right? So like I watched it when we were going to record it originally before we decided to take a break. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it when we were going to record yesterday. And I was like, but I got distracted halfway through. And like, and then I came back and I watched the rest of it. And I was like, okay. And then like today I was like, I'm going to watch it again, but with Lydia. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I like this. And then I was like, you know who I think would like this? Lucas. I think Lucas would like this movie. Mm-hmm. At least a little bit. At least maybe a lot of it.
I think it would really engage with him.
He would scream about those silencers.
Yeah.
Like all the guns and stuff, like just enough to get him engaged. But then like the plot happens. Like he might really like it. And I'm like, am I fixing to watch this a fourth time? Because I don't do a lot of rewatches unless we're doing it for the podcast or it's a classic movie that I love a whole bunch or it's like something that's really grabbed me. But lots of times I'm a one and done with a lot of movies. I'm like, well, that was great, but I don't need to watch that again.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, I am applauding that I would watch this again. And I would like to watch other people watch it and experience their first time. And Sean, when he described this movie to me several times, he was like, this is great. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, it is great. Sean, stop being smug. I bet you he listens to this podcast at work, but we work together. So he's going to stick his head out and be like, I told you.
Jen, what's your applaud moment?
I don't think that there are many movies that I've seen where the person that the kid looks up to is that close with who they look up to. Like, usually it's like some hero that is like from some cartoon or Saturday morning show. And I don't know. It's there is a really delicate mix of fantasy and reality in this. And I think that they pulled it off. But in retrospect, it is a little more real than I remember it. I don't know what I was subjected to as a kid where I thought that this was just like, you know, just a really fun romp. But looking back at it now, it just, it is, to use Naomi's word, it's visceral. There are a lot of things in here that make it feel like an adult film, not like an adult film, but a film for adults. And so I liked the blend, and I liked the bringing back of, or sort of the reminder that real people, like his dad says, you know, heroes are real people that do real things. You know, they're the ones that are cooking the meals and washing your clothes. And so both of those things are my applauds.
I would like to submit to the council the name of the porn parody of this, which would involve no children.
Right.
It would be Cloak and Dag Her, starring Jack Flesh.
Okay.
I can, well, do better. I just can't look like that.
And Dig Her.
Oh, Choke and Drag Her.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there.
You're going to bleep me for some good old family-friendly BDSM. Hey, Lance, how about you make this G-rated again?
Okay, my applaud moment is the filmmakers don't make Davey into someone who can't tell fantasy from reality. It's kind of like, I hung out with my friend Elijah a few weeks ago, and we watched Mazes and Monsters on YouTube because I was talking to him about the fact that we're doing Cloak and Dagger. And he was like, oh, yeah, I remember that one. But shout out, Elijah, if you are listening to this podcast. Woo-hoo. Well, we watched Mazes and Monsters with Tom Hanks. And Mazes and Monsters came out of the D&D Satanic Panic that was in the 80s. And it very much is like, oh, this guy can't tell, you know, reality from fantasy, and that's why it's dangerous. But this movie is like the anti-Mazes and Monsters.
Oh.
And it was like, there was so much sincerity with Davey as a character. He could tell fantasy from reality. He was like, no, they have a real gun. You shouldn't go in there. They're dangerous. He understood that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, did he have a fake gun that had blood in it? Yeah, he did. Did he consider his, you know, baseball a grenade? Yeah, but it still didn't mean that he couldn't differentiate between like a real gun versus a fake gun.
And that, like in It, when they pull out their various weapons and they believe so hard that it's real.
Right.
We don't have that in this either.
Right. And like, you could very easily have the whole false narrative. Like, is this all in his head? That sort of thing. But they're like, nope. Very early on, they're like, this is not all in his head. He isn't just seeing this. He, like, we see as the audience that Mr. Rice has the ball, the baseball, and that's how he's able to find Davey.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, like, they could have made this a lot less sincere on the part of like, you know, how parent, you know, how it's easy to kind of like, kids are always using their imaginations and we shouldn't have to necessarily listen to everything they say. Well, sometimes you should be listening to kids because, you know, that imagination comes from the things that they're saying, mm-hmm. come from a place of reality. And if you do not treat that as sacred to the kid, then you are essentially teaching that child that unless you are an adult, you are going to be discredited or discounted. And for the next few years of your life, no one's going to believe you, even if you are telling the truth.
I love that. I love that so much. I think that should be held to the heart of anybody. I will also facet that with you.
Yeah.
When it comes to to working with children or to actively loving a child, most of what they say is very annoying.
Yes.
Okay. Just, I mean, if you know, you know. And if you don't know, you can write to us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com and yell at me and I will read it and laugh because you obviously don't know children that well. But when a kid talks passionately about something they love, but when they talk passionately about something that at least at the front, feels like nonsense. Like, that's my favorite. Like, yeah, I mean, like, I might not want to talk at length about guns or whatever, right? But if that segues me to being able to hear about what you think is really funny or what you think is very interesting, like, I get to know you as a full person. You get to feel heard as a person. And, like, yeah, like, if you don't engage with play, which is, like, this very, oh, there's a series on Netflix, Lids, that you might like that I started last night that I'm going to continue as I go to bed tonight. Mm-hmm. It's called Human Playground.
Okay.
I think you said it was narrated by Idris Elba, Jen?
Ooh.
Yeah, it is phenomenal. And I only got like 4 episodes in, but there are like 8 of them. No, there's 6 of them. I watched all of them. Anyways, Human Playground, please watch it. It talks about the importance of play and how it informs us in so many ways. It's how we learn how to hunt, how to interact with socially. It teaches us how to grow business. It teaches us, like, everything we do is play, is practice for what we do on a larger scale, or how we connect with ourselves on so many different levels. Like, if your play is painful, like, why do you do that? And how do you connect to that? And what pain are you trying to engage with, or, you know, reorient yourself so you encounter that pain differently? Like, it was such like an informative thing. I'm going to rewatch the series, but anytime, and that's what makes like kids movies, like some of the tropes come up over and over again, because it's like, why don't you know how to play like a child? Right? Like, well, on the surface, that sounds very shallow. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is that if you don't know how to play, you don't know how to reach that creative part of yourself that allows you to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I just...
I'm going to put a phrase out in there. Adult size playgrounds. Because I would lose so much more weight if I was like hanging out at an adult size playground. Like swing sets, slides, like having to get up and down stairs. I would be so much more healthier.
I was 20 pounds lighter when I was on the playground all the time with the kids.
Yeah.
And they try to recreate that at the gym, but it just seems like work.
Because it is. It's not fun at all. Imagine a gym where it was just like a giant playground for adults.
I think that's what they're trying to do with CrossFit, but it doesn't work. Right?
Parkour.
Oh,
parkour seems kind of fun. They have this thing called free running, I think it's called, and you just run through the forest. And I'm like, if I was running from zombies, I would need to be able to run through a forest very fast, and that would be like parkour, but I'd land on moss and not concrete.
Yeah. A lot of wooded areas around here.
Yeah. I don't think I could run through the green belt over here and be like running like a little wolf without like getting arrested.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's get into our shocked moments.
All right, I'll go first since I ended. God, this movie has such a low rating across all the review sites.
Oh, what is it?
It's like anywhere from like a 6.5 to a 7, somewhere around there. It's like this is A+ material, storytelling wise, film language. I do not see why it has such a low rating unless you're taking it as like in like the most bad faith take. And like some of the reviews that I read, like it feels like they're kind of taking it in bad faith. I don't know. Maybe I'm taking those reviews in bad faith.
I think context has a lot to do with it. Like,
right.
Sean suggested this movie, and I know he's like going to roll his eyes about this, but I squarely went in with my tongue in my cheek because I was like, well, How Sue was one that we did. Right.
But I
didn't hate it, but I wasn't like, oh, that made sense.
What else? So there's the other aspect of like a lot of these reviews were in the time. Maybe they came a few years afterwards or something. So I think that has something to do with it. Like seeing this movie, you know, 38 years. No, that's like 28.
39 years ago.
39 years ago. I mean, like, and knowing everything that's happened, how there are literally groups of people who look at instances and things that happen, and they will reconstruct a narrative that fits better with their own ideas. And it happens to everybody. Everybody does this on some level. But like, it just becomes one of those things where it's easy to see like, oh, this is just children's stuff. This is just for children. When in reality, there's a lot of like moments that kind of overlap with, you know, how adults play versus how kids play, and how like they kind of intersect in moments. So.
When you see an adult having a really good time with a kid and a kid having a really good time with an adult, there's something super precious there.
Mm-hmm.
What's your shocked moment, Jen? What you got?
Oh, me? I was going to ask you for yours first, but I can...
Oh, why? Is yours so good?
No.
Well, let's rock, paper, scissors for it.
Boop, 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 boop.
Mine's dynamite. F*** you.
Hers is dynamite, too.
Oh.
She only had one
why
finger.
Why did you only have one finger out?
I tried to pull out...
Okay, well, intent counts. Mine was dynamite.
I guess I just missed this one.
For all of you who are listening to this, Jen just pulled out her middle finger.
I pulled out one finger, my pointer finger, and Jen pointed her pointy finger. But mine was dynamite, and hers were broken scissors, so I think I win, which means you go first.
Not unless the broken pair of scissors cuts off the wick that goes into the dynamite.
I'll go.
Okay.
I think that there are some things that still take me out of the believability of this movie. One of them being that this kid is obsessed with Cloak and Dagger from the beginning. And the thing that he gets handed to instigate the whole plot is a cartridge for his very favorite game for him to do all of this stuff. Like, that would be if like... somebody gave me like a free download to Portal 3 because I just love Portal 3, and it turned out to be like some, you know, alien conspiracy or something like that. But it's just that there's this link between, yes, this exterior thing with spies and everything is happening, and it just so happens to Venn diagram exactly with this kid's interests.
Yeah.
Your suspension of belief is caught in that.
Yes, that's the start of things, and at the end of that string is that what was the main baddie that he actually shoots at the end?
Rice.
Like he looks over to the side to see where Davey is looking and shoots over there. But as a kid, I thought it really was because Rice could see Jack Flack.
Oh.
And I couldn't understand it because like he's sort of in this hologram image in the way that they produce it.
Jen, that's the separation between a kid's viewing of this movie and an adult's viewing of this movie.
Okay, but I think they do bring that up in the movie where Davey says to Jack, "Could he see you?" And Jack says he doesn't have the imagination to see me. I thought that they had said that.
And as a kid, I wouldn't have.
You wouldn't know. Have read yeah.
listening
that,
to dialogue. No, I agree.
Yeah.
Or that it was like maybe he didn't have the imagination to see the real me, or I don't know how I would have really interpreted that. But also, like, it's kind of weird that it's like an inherited invisible friend, like he was like his dad's invisible friend too.
Andy passed down Woody though, and then passed around Woody.
Gross.
Nobody wants to pass around Woody. Well, I mean, like, so long as it's still functioning.
I mean, and scene.
As long as it's clean.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting in. You know what.
Wipe it down. Use protection. Okay.
You know what's getting into you. Sorry.
Sorry, Jen, you were saying?
Oh, just, I mean, there were a couple of things, I guess, that, you know, I just had a hard time following, I guess, as a kid and then not believing as an adult. But that's it.
My shocked moment is child murderers.
Oh, she's got a whole page of it.
I got a list. You know I love my uncorroborated, not correct lists. Okay. There are, in fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 murders. Seven, eight murders in this film. And I posit that 5 of them are directly caused by a child.
Oh, so you mean child murderers.
Child murderer.
Child murderer?
Murderer. It's only Davey.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first person to die is Dr. Cartridge. I don't know his name. The guy with the cartridge who, I say doctor because he was wearing a lab coat, and we all have established that is a problem.
And you say cartridge, but we all know it was really a tape.
Yes, honey. Okay, so then the second one is Morris, who, you know, like, I would say that Davey's an accessory a bit because I'm mad about it still.
Yeah.
Then tracksuit from a car crash. Okay, not exactly a murder, but like careless driving, but, you know, like still kind of Davey's fault. Okay, these ones I think are particularly David. Alvarez.
Yeah.
100%
yeah.
David's fault.
Direct.
Yeah. Not, but even more direct, Mr. Rice.
Yeah.
He straight up myrtleizes him. Like, if you debate any other one of these, he murders Rice. Now, self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, plausible deniability. But what about Jack? Jack Flack. I decided that he counts. No, he got shot. He was fine. And then Davey's like, you're not fine. And then he's like, I'm not fine. And he was dead.
Yeah.
Because he was dead all along. Okay. And then the old man and the old woman. He left the bomb back there. Him and his dad kind of co-murdered them.
Yeah.
But they were pretty old.
George, remember your heart.
They were also bad people, with the exception of Morris, Cartridge Guy, and Jack Flack.
Yeah.
Like five out of those eight people are bad guys.
Yeah.
But yes. We're also supposed to believe that the good guys are the ones protecting this information.
Mm-hmm.
And we really don't know, like, what this plane is going to be used for.
I also think that being a good guy means due process.
And agreed. Agreed.
Children don't. I mean, like, I'm not a proponent to say that the system is good all the time and that it works all the time. And I would never say that there aren't people who have been abused by the system. But for the majority of it.
Right. That being said, I will defend Davey on one aspect.
Okay.
He was thrown into this and he's reacting to the things that are being given to him.
And for a 10-year-old kid, he does a pretty good job.
Yeah. Now, if he had taken that cartridge, maybe not to Morris, but directly to the police.
Yes.
Do you think he would have been believed?
I think that if he had been the lieutenant, what's his face?
Yeah.
Who was very complimentary, even though, like, he had to spend like half his day dealing with this kid. Like, I feel like if he had been like, you need to look inside of this. There's something, the guy said there's something up with this. I feel like he might have done his due diligence and, like, at least opened the cartridge or whatever.
Would the police officer known enough about opening up a cartridge?
Well, here's the thing.
And what it looks like inside.
You're not meant to be an expert in everything, but you can show your intelligence by seeking knowledge from people who have it. So.
And he did. He sought it from Morris. Morris, who
Well, yeah, Davey sought it from Morris, but it was possible that the lieutenant could have done too.
It's possible. My whole thing is, if I'm already being seen as a kid, uh-huh. If I'm already being seen as, like, I have this history of my dad not, like, listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, now police are getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when Jack Flack specifically says you can't give him too much information, that's like a little bit of a subconscious saying you have to be careful of the adults that you're asking, because they're not going to see things the way that you see them. They're not going to necessarily be taking you seriously. Mm-hmm. So, like, when he gives it to Morris and Morris is like, yeah, there's something definitely off about this. Let's go in and try and take a look at it. If Morris here's what I would have done if I was Morris in this situation.
Oh, tell me.
As soon as the cartridge says it is illegal to view all of this, you have so many seconds before you have to, like, not view it. I would have taken that cartridge out and then, like, stored it somewhere and probably, like, tried to figure out what needed to be done to get that back to the authorities.
Put it in the store safe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
If there is a store safe, or just, like, put it somewhere. Like, Leota and I watched Black Adam, and there was in that movie, there's kind of this, like, you know, MacGuffin that has to get, like, found somewhere. And the kid, like, is smart enough to kind of, like, keep it off of his person. And so that's what I was thinking of, is like, oh, well, if I am being told that viewing this is going to, like, cost me jail time, I'm less likely to go ahead and view that.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, you weren't done. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I thought that it might be fun if I could tell you the three people who should have died instead of all of these other people.
Including Morris?
Morris should have never even gotten harmed in any way.
Agreed.
Let alone his corpse paraded around like a Macy's Day balloon.
In a trunk. Yeah.
Yeah. As it ballooned up, because it's a Texas summer.
Yes.
And I say that I don't think he would smell bad, but after all of that, even just a few hours,
mm-hmm.
Morris.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that the people should have died instead of these people is the bus driver that refused Davey.
Agreed.
Going to the airport.
Agreed.
You're dead. You're dead to me. A 10-year-old comes to you asking for help, begs you for help.
Yeah.
Off.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other people who should have died is the couple at the cafe.
I would also include the bus driver towards the beginning, where he clearly sees this kid running from a van that cuts off the bus, and he does not inform the authorities.
Yes. All right. That seems like anybody else got anything else?
I do have one thing that wasn't in Sean Facts, but it just came to mind. There are a couple of times when Jack Flack references himself used to being called Agent X. And Agent X is actually the video game. The Agent X arcade game was always, I mean, it came out as Agent X. And then the producers wanted to associate the movie with this. And they'd already used, they wanted to use Cloak and Dagger. So in distribution, they changed the name of the game from Agent X to Cloak and Dagger. So when he is referencing himself as as being called Agent X in the past, that's an actual thing. Like he was actually Agent X in the arcade game.
Right. Cause there's the plotters, they use footage from a video game. And what Jen's saying is that video game was originally called Agent X. And then they changed the name of the video game to line up with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But plotters will never change our name because we believe that cinema can both shock you and it can bring you to your feet in applause, you know, as we join the team of that which we call an audience.
Mm-hmm.
We are one animal, one human animal.
We are all one cat pushing something off the edge.
Right? That's good enough for me. We will see you guys in, February?
Applauders, you made it to a new year, but all the way at the end of the first month. You're looking great. You're smelling, you're still smelling like pine.
Yeah,
love that.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, wonderful.
Was that? Did you get that shirt for Christmas?
Nice.
It looks really good on you.
Yeah. Gotta love those ugly sweaters that you wear at company parties.
Yes. Thank God for all those people who decided to like fuck it and just give you a gift card because you really just wanted to go to Starbucks anyway.
Yeah. Money and gift cards are never a bad gift.
I mean, and anybody who says otherwise doesn't think that you have the autonomy to make those decisions for yourself.
Right.
As always, our best way to reach other people is through search engines and the podcast places that you find your podcasts. And some of those places have reviews, which it really bumps us up. So if you could review or rate one of our episodes or the podcast in whole on Apple Podcasts, as well as podchaser.com, and rate us on Spotify, that will lift us up, get us to other people, and also word of mouth. Just share. Let people know that shocknoplod.com is out there and it's available to you. And if you would like to be a supreme supporter of the show for $1 per month, you can become an official applauder on Patreon. Just visit shocknoplod.com and click on the Become an Applauder link at the top.
So until next month, until next episode, until however you guys edit and leave this in there, I'm Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid.
And this is
Shocked and Applaud.
Congrats, Applauder. You've reached the conclusion of our first episode of 2023 with our review of 1984's Cloak and Dagger. We hope you've enjoyed our plot walkthrough, Sean Facts, along with our super secret Shocked and Applaudable moments. Interested in more podcasts while you wait for next month's episode? Real Feels Podcast has got you covered with The Legend of 1900. And Reels of Justice has a new episode putting Spider-Man No Way Home on trial. Check out links to these episodes in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and agent alias Jackie Flash Drive, Jen. Do you have a super secret message that you don't want decoded by anyone but us? We'd like to hear from you if you have any concerns about the show's content or just have some suggestions you'd prefer we didn't read on air. Email us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com or leave us a message on shockedandapplaud.com/contact. We'll be back in early February with a brand new episode. And although it's Naomi's choice, she's picked one of my all-time favorite 80s films. And Sean will return to the show with live Sean facts. It's going to be an amazing month, so be sure to subscribe to our feed to get our first part on day one. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Yay! Well, that wasn't as painful as I thought it would be.
But it was really embarrassing.
There are still data centers out there that use a ton of tape.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Can't you just shred it with like a magnet, though?
Well, sure. But if it's in a data center where you've got everything housed out and clean and cooled, it's in a place where you're not expecting somebody to walk in.
I mean,
with a
here's
magnet.
The thing. I walk in, okay, open my trench coat, ninja stars, but not ninja stars, those letter magnets from the fridge. And I just shuriken my way through the entire.
Well, this isn't Fight Club, and you can't just like take in a
magnet.
It's
more like the Matrix. I thought you'd appreciate it.
All right, but how do you do that to Amazon? How do you walk in?
Oh, that's
Amazon.
That makes perfect sense. I would have the package of the letters, the magnet letters, delivered to me there.
Using Amazon.
Using Amazon, also... obviously, Lydia. If FedEx shows up,
FedEx is your Achilles heel.
I had a dream last night that I put on a FedEx shirt again.
Oh no!
And I was like, I hate this so much. And I know I don't own a FedEx shirt, anything, because I dropped all of that stuff off when I left.
Yeah.
I was like, bye, guys. Enjoy.
I actually, so Microsoft took a bunch of code off of a site called GitHub and is storing it in the Antarctic. It's the Antarctica. No, it doesn't matter.
The Arctic?
Might be the Arctic. But like there's a preservation of data and code somewhere in a place that if we were like, I don't know, it's supposed to be like an ark sort of thing.
Oh, is it like the seed ark, but for tech?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
So that if like a future civilization came across us.
Yeah, scorched earth style, they're going to be listening to this podcast and they're going to be trying to find some heirloom tomato seeds to plant. And in order to fabricate the timeline and customization of this growing schedule of those heirloom tomatoes as they're listening to our melodic voices say a whole bunch of times.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
They'll need data that will help them create the algorithm to be able to propagate those species.
Or create like artificial versions of us from all of our.
Oh, if they're
audio
listening
recordings.
To this podcast, okay. They're not trying to make us again.
Okay. Like the most unrealistic part of the scenario is that this hobby podcast that gets less than 50 listeners a week is stored for future people.
We're not going in the seed vault or the tech vault or whatever.
I mean, if we are. It's by some miracle.
I mean, we bribe somebody at the Library of Congress. We're like, do you want your data corrupted with these? And then I just like with the letters in between my fingers.
Look, and I'm just saying, I want our podcast to like be listened to.
Yeah.
Going forward. But I just don't see it happening with current listenership. Someone's going to have to get really famous, probably doing something real dumb. I'll take the hit.
No, you're the one with the chops to write the All-American novel that will get us on the list.
I'll be
right?
Like, John, I listen to my podcast. We should put it into that tech seed vault.
I know.
But here's the thing. We talk politics.
Yeah.
We talk food.
All the time.
We talk entertainment.
Yep.
We don't talk sports.
We do talk childhood trauma.
We talk trauma. We talk animals.
Yeah.
It's like pretty much everything except for sports. So
I mean, we could about Quidditch if you wanted.
Bitching about Quidditch. I like that as a name. A name for a podcast?
No, I refuse to give any voice to that woman in any way. Just done.
Yeah.
Did you see? I don't know if it was real because I did not choose to look into it. But did you see that she tweeted Mary Turfmas?
Oh.
I don't know if it's true, but it might as well be true because I'm just
it
done with the woman.
It sounds realistic.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. Well, we are part of the Wayback Machine. We do have a website, so that's already been tracked. We are being archived. whether we like it or not.
Are we?
Yeah, we have a public website. Somebody is going in and saving all these files.
Nobody's doing that.
No, it's automatic. It's on a.
So it's not some person. It's an algorithm.
Yes. So a little crawler.
At least the machines care about us.
Oh, that's why it's such a wasteland. Because the
podcast wasteland.
The only one who can survive are the machines.
Podcast wasteland.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm on there because of code. So
good.
Now they'll like be like, well, what is this coder up to? What were they doing? What is? Oh, she. Wow. Doesn't sound. It sounds like a she. It's a she. What is she up to? Okay, she doesn't just code. She's got conversational audio recordings. Let's go and recreate this coder. And then
you think AI is going to happen to you?
It doesn't matter. It
all
won't
of
be
Haley
really
Joel Osment style, isn't that him?
Yeah.
And like, yeah. You think you're going to be like made into a teddy bear or something? Because like you sewed your mom's hair into the armpit of a teddy bear 35 years ago, and then somebody came across. Just remember some of the more obscure parts of this podcast where we've talked about stuff that's even more tangential than this moment.
We're going to save that for the quips at the end of the year.
Oh my God.
Was it, what weren't we talking about a movie?
Oh, we were talking about tape storage.
Humla, Hulk Smash, Microchip, Morris, Texas Garden, Dingle Dangle. We were at Dingle Dangle Squirt Gun.